Hello, and welcome to the Above Average Irrelevance podcast. Today is Tuesday, August 16th, and this is episode 21. I'm Matt Weaver, and I'm here with Scott Nelson.
Hello, hey, Matt.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good.
It's been a while.
It has.
I've been kind of busy.
Yeah. It's summertime, people get busy. But the rain has come and gone. Windows are open. Crickets are making noise.
Should I shut that door?
Nah, we're drinking tequila. Who cares?
Okay.
And
we are on our second tequila.
And it's time for podcast.
All right.
So,
yeah. Oh, first, weren't you going to comment on the text I sent you with the emoji? Did you see that?
No.
Hmm.
What did you, I mean... You had an emoji. You had the gun in there, right?
Yeah. The next version of iOS, did you read this? They're replacing the gun with a squirt gun.
Yeah.
So got to use them while you got them, right? Like, so are they going to pry my gun out of my cold, dead iPhone?
Have you seen some of the backlash on the web about this?
I just read about it tonight, so I haven't read that much stuff, but...
The basic argument goes, hey, it's a gun. It's not a water gun on every other platform. So if Apple changes it to a water gun, then people who don't know might assume they're sending a squirt gun to their friends.
Oh.
Which is a totally different connotation than... I'm sending you, you know, a revolver.
Right. That's right? A real technical problem.
And, you know, I think I see what Apple's trying to do there. I think maybe they've gone a step too far in trying to impose their rubber-bumpered world upon me.
Right. No, I agree. I hadn't even thought about the repercussions of that. I mean, to me, that's a complete non-starter then. You can't have someone give someone the illusion that they're sending something that they're not. The only answer is going to be then if the text is going not to iMessages, you got to strip out the emoji. Maybe they'll do that. They could special case that one emoji and just get rid of it.
What a terrible idea that would be. Yeah. the internet is full of people who are very eloquent, and with luck, someone inside Apple read some well-reasoned arguments against the change, and the next beta it will go back.
Be gone. Yeah. Maybe they fully intended to do that all along, and they're just kind of making a statement or some sort of, you know, quasi-political concession. Oh, well, we were going to, but it's not going to work out. Sorry.
In a way, this kind of, if they choose to change it, or I suppose even if they haven't, the upside of the beta program is they can do this stuff in a beta and get some feedback and decide what they want to do at that point.
Right.
So, you know.
The article I read, there was a separate thing about how Apple and I think Microsoft had lobbied Unicode.org to not introduce further firearms. Like, there was a proposal to introduce a rifle, and they opposed that, which I think was maybe a good idea. Do you really need a bunch of varying firearm emoji? I don't know.
With
for what?
My circle of friends?
Maybe.
They want to get down to specific model numbers, yeah. Right? I mean, you know, maybe you'd want a Kimber 1911 in stainless steel just so you could, you know, make fun of your idiot friends, right? You know?
Right.
And somebody else would say, no, I really got to have a Glock 19 in there because you Kimber crazies are stupid, right? I'll take my plastic gun any day. And I can totally understand all those arguments. I'm fairly certain I don't need to do it in emoji, but different people feel differently on this topic. So, yeah.
So just to get it on the record, that's why I sent you the revolver emoji.
Like, okay.
Nothing, no hidden meaning. It was just I wanted to bring it up.
Fair enough. Well, you done brought it up. So, yeah. Since we're talking about politics, sort of, you want to talk about this Vox article about Hillary Clinton?
Sure.
Did you finally get around to reading it?
I did. It was a pretty long article. It was pretty compelling, though. Like, it's a very interesting argument. So the title of the article is Understanding Hillary, Why the Clinton America Sees...
We haven't had that much tequila. Come on.
Okay, Why the Clinton America Sees Isn't the Clinton Colleagues Now.
Were you having a seize the day moment there?
It was one of those things where the order of the words was confusing to me.
Maybe you need more tequila.
Yeah, because I thought it was driving at why the America that Clinton sees, and then it didn't make sense to me. Okay, so the why the Clinton America sees isn't the Clinton Colleagues Now. So basically it's talking about the difference between like public perception of Hillary Clinton and what insiders, people who work with her, people who have worked with her, know of her or know her to be.
Well, you can sum it up very succinctly by saying she is a terrible orator. Bill Clinton was really quite good at delivering speeches. She's not. I'm not trying to be mean. She's just not good at it.
No. And that was the key in the article, that she is a listener. They identified her as a listener, someone who likes to listen to people's problems, people's concerns, and then go, you know, back somewhere in a back room and act upon it. You know, I'm not going to have a...
Are you sure you want to say into a back room and act upon it?
Well, that's kind of, I mean...
Maybe. It's a smoke-filled back room filled with CEOs and email servers.
I mean, that's a common criticism of her, right? There's no transparency in what she does, and that's... kind of the deal. Like, you know, her public persona is different than what is going on.
But the article was full of people who said, if you've worked for her, you'll probably really like her. Right? Because she's thoughtful. She listens. She'll change her mind when presented with new data. In a lot of ways... the article suggested that she had many admirable qualities that people like in a good boss. To her credit, I suppose.
And I think the key was none of those qualities are particularly well suited to being a campaigner or to running a campaign. Those are qualities that are conducive to running an administration, to getting work done, to collaborating and cooperating. Running a campaign is about,
it's hard to
like
imagine.
You said, it's about orating. It's about making big speeches. It's about inspiring the base.
That's something that Donald Trump is good at. It's hard to imagine Hillary Clinton being successful finding ground for compromise with Republicans in Congress. But maybe it'd be nice if all of the yahoos could figure out how to compromise on something.
Yeah, I mean, I would turn it around a little bit and say it would be hard for Republicans in Congress to find the ability to work with Hillary Clinton. I don't think that the reverse is true. And the article basically covers that. It covers the fact that she is still always willing to work with anybody. I mean, it went through a laundry list of people who voted for her husband's impeachment, who have, you know, said all these terrible things about her, everyone who was highly critical of her and her healthcare reform efforts, people who were highly critical when she ran for Senate from New York. Yet she's co-sponsored bills. She's worked on things with them. She's willing to work with anyone to get something done. Which I think is to her credit. That's something, that's one of the key problems I have with Donald Trump, is it's always about like dishing it out but not being able to take it. It's about holding personal grudges, about getting payback. I mean, Donald Trump, if you say something about him, you're dead to him. You know, you're the worst scum of the earth, right? You know, the Republican National Convention was a week of anti-Hillary Clinton rhetoric. I mean, that was the key focus. I watched the whole thing. That was the key focus of every speech, is against Hillary Clinton. Then in the Democratic National Convention, there were like targeted things about Donald Trump in every speech, you know, mostly commenting about his, you know, policy experience, like legitimate small concerns. Hands. No, nothing. Right. No, nothing like that. No real personal attacks. It was more about his political abilities. And then he goes off, listen to all these mean, terrible, nasty things they've said about me at the Democratic National Convention. When, I mean, it was 1% of the total of what was said about Hillary Clinton at the Republican. It's this idea that, you know, I can dish it out, but I can't take it. And so she's the complete opposite of that. It's like you beat her down over and over and over again, and she's still willing to come to the table if you're going to compromise and get legislation passed that she thinks is beneficial.
Well, certainly Donald Trump's style is, to use hyperbole, as a methodology to deliver a message. So
you don't think he really takes it personally? He's just pretending like he does? Because I don't buy that. I think he is a petty person, and I think he takes everything incredibly personally.
I am not in the business of armchair psychoanalyzing Donald Trump or any of the presidential candidates. I had a really great discussion with a very good friend of mine today at lunch about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And what we came to was you know, my friend of mine is the email thing is a real stumbling block for him with Hillary Clinton, right? Because it's against the rules. He broke the rules. There should really be a consequence, right? That's where he was starting from.
And please tell me he didn't say she should go to prison.
No.
Okay.
But the argument, the basic argument, I believe, is valid. And working through what he really meant, and maybe why I have trouble with the email thing, and in a lot of ways with Hillary Clinton in general, is whenever you see a presidential candidate or any leader make a decision and perform an action that is at its core something that's selfish, something that advances themselves at the expense of, for lack of a better term, the common good, the greater good. It makes you have a dislike for that person, right? I mean, you view that negatively, even if you can't articulate what it is. So I think what Hillary did with the email thing as Secretary of State was a very selfish, calculated political decision on her part, right? I absolutely think she was trying to hide her emails so that they could not be fodder for her political enemies on this presidential campaign. I think that was a very calculated, self-interested decision on her part. And that's kind of distasteful. Right? She was Secretary of State.
That's a servant of the public.
Yeah, your job is to serve the citizens of the United States of America. And part of the requirements for that job is you record your emails so that if there needs to be, there can be transparency later. Mm-hmm. That's just how it works, right? I know that previous secretaries of state used email in a more casual way, but at a different time. I've actually read an autobiographical book from Colin Powell, who commented about doing statecraft with other world leaders.
Over personal email?
Not just personal email, over AOL. Hmm. Right? But when Colin Powell was Secretary of State, it was a very different time than today.
Right.
Right? The rules have changed. And Hillary Clinton made a selfish choice and assumed the rules didn't apply to her. That's not cool. Right? That's really where I have a hard time with that.
As an aside, quick, without making a value judgment on this, don't you think it's odd that in the whole time she was Secretary of State, someone didn't see the address the email was coming from and raise a red flag?
Yeah, I don't know.
Don't you think it's odd that, like, you know, tens of thousands or however many emails were sent? I mean, I'm sure emails were sent to the president from her personal email address. Don't you think somebody would have said, this seems strange? This email address doesn't end in .gov. I've always thought the whole thing seems very strange that it went on as long as it did, that nobody in IT in the government, nobody in the State Department, nobody shut it down.
It's not clear to me that that's true. I don't want to get into the details of it because it doesn't matter for what I need to get out of it, right? I think...
Yeah. You know, this is more from a technical standpoint, don't you think?
Yeah, but
that's
odd? I think there were functionaries that raised concerns and they were steamrolled over.
Okay.
Right. Whether you've got a duty to go outside of your chain of command, I don't know. Right. I don't care. Right. Because what I take from it was she made a selfish choice. And as a character reference, it doesn't enhance it.
So when you say that she made a selfish choice to further her own
political career,
so then do you think, like, to what end do you think that she's trying to accomplish there? Or, you know, you say it's a selfish choice because she's going to personally benefit from being president or because of the money she'll make or, like... I feel like politicians make calculated, selfish decisions all the time.
Yep.
And it's just kind of like how politics work. Like, they have to make decisions.
But in general, nobody likes politicians, right?
So, right.
How does one thing not follow the other?
Problem there is, like, to what end? My question to what end is, like, it's not like she's profiting greatly from what she's done. It really just was a political calculation in the best effort to further her career in public service.
Maybe, but when you're, kind of taking a dump on your public service job, right, on the requirements of your public service job in order to further your career in public service, right? What's wrong with you? Does she need the $400,000 a year that you get from being president? No. Not even a little bit, right? The Clintons are wealthy. She wants the job for the same reason everybody else wants the job. Power. Okay. You have to want power to want to be president. Her, especially, because as First Lady, she got a pretty good view of the demands of the job, right? And how crazy that job is,
mm-hmm.
right? We have a tradition in the United States where past presidents, you know, do not speak out about current political events because they are part of a very select and very rarefied group of people who understand how difficult the job is. And so they're not gonna, you know, pee in the pool, so yeah. to speak, because they know what it was like when they were trying to make a choice one way or the other on any one of the 1,000 topics that come up at the White House in any given day. And while she hasn't been president, she's been First Lady. She's lived in the White House for a while. I feel like she has to know
what that is. She's been a senator. She's been Secretary of State.
Yeah, I mean, and she still wants the job.
Yeah.
You got to be a little crazy.
To
want that.
I just find that argument that it's just power hungry, power seeking to be incredibly cynical, because I feel like this is a person who's devoted her life to public service, essentially. I mean, so many of her issues are healthcare and children's healthcare and welfare reform, and she has really helped a lot of people in her career. So I feel like it's incredibly cynical to just act like she wants to sit in the Oval Office and, you know, stroke her cat and laugh maniacally. I mean,
and demand $1 million for a laser on the moon.
I think that plays into the Hillary Clinton as a villain narrative, and I think she's a very convenient villain.
Well,
I don't think she's a villain. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of Hillary Clinton. I feel like I'm defending her to you. I don't like Hillary Clinton. She is not my choice as the Democratic nominee, but I don't think she's a villain.
I'm pretty sure she doesn't think she's a villain, right? But I feel like if she wanted to have a life of public service and try to help people, that her resume and her connections would allow her to do so in any one of 1,000 different ways, right? Either through the Clinton Foundation or anything else. Like, she could go join any charity.
But are you going to argue that the greatest impact you could possibly have wouldn't be as president, the most powerful person in the world?
Well, you may be the most powerful person in the world, but how much time of your day are you going to have to work on whatever your little charitable project is, right?
Still, I think you have the greatest sway over whatever you want. No. To be your pet project.
Right? World events are going to dictate your day 95% of the time, right? If you're president, you're going to have to figure out how to deal with Vladimir Putin and, you know, potentially regime change in Syria and a civil war, right? Where's the upside to that discussion, right? That thing is a mess.
I still think the clout that you can give as president to whatever issue you want to get done, I mean, there's no one who has more clout.
Maybe. Maybe not. I think it depends on the issue. Right? So what issue does she really want to work on? I don't know. Right? Her policy proposals are like 47 billion pages long of, what are you talking about, lady? Right? They're not, you know, crazy pants on fire like Donald Trump's proposals are, which I don't know. I have a hard time parsing. It's hard for me to get through a stump speech, like reading a stump speech, because the logical arguments presented in the stump speech are so illogical, right? They're
mm-hmm.
straw man arguments, or they're not okay, right? They do not hold water. But I'm sure they sound good in a room full of people who are cheering or chanting, Who knows, right? But they just don't make sense, right? As much as I think, you know, the email thing with Hillary Clinton is a very selfish, calculated political action on her part, I kind of think all of Donald Trump's candidacy is a selfish action on his part. Like, I really don't get the vibe that, you know, he really wants to, you know, do a public service.
I think from the very beginning it was about increasing his personal brand recognition. Like, I think he never thought in a million years it would go this far. And here it is.
I made the argument today to my friend at lunchtime. I said, you know, I don't know that I'm going to be able to vote for Donald Trump in November, but I really think one of the worst things that could happen for all of us is Donald Trump poisons the well and the Democrats win a decisive landslide victory up and down the ticket. Hillary Clinton goes into the White House. They pick up seats in the House and potentially gain the majority in the Senate.
Because it's really going to be undeserved.
Well, whether it's deserved or not, they're going to view it as we've received a really strong mandate.
Right.
From the people.
Political capital.
To go do whatever it is that we're going to go do.
Right.
And that's not true.
Right.
But like, I don't, people win an election and they're like, you know, hey, I won. I've got 10 million more votes nationally than the other guy, right? Clearly, everybody wants me to go do my thing. Well, no.
You were just the lesser of the two evils.
There was the 60 million people that voted against you.
Right.
Right? They're just as important because they're your constituents too. Right? And that's the thing that drives me batty. When somebody wins an election and they're like, yeah, I can, clearly my ideas are best and I don't have to take any input from the other side. Right? Because I'm pretty sure the Democrats are wrong and the Republicans are wrong and a not unreasonable course of action is somewhere in the middle. But alas, I'm going to step down off my soapbox.
So ultimately, I mean, basically, part of what this said is that in some ways she's her own worst enemy, and she's come to this place where she's at today, where she tells lies of political convenience, where she's evasive and untruthful from a lifetime of scandal and investigations and press and hearings before Congress. And it went through, I don't remember, but it went through the litany of scandals that she's been attacked for. And so it's brought her to this place where she just always is trying to evade, is trying to defend. You know, and that's not, I'm not saying that's an excuse, but it was an interesting...
It's an explanation.
...explanation of how she's gotten to where she's gotten with her truthiness.
The thing that was most powerful for me was the author's claim that he talked to people who have worked for her and worked with her over the years. And not just like four or five of her favorite people, like
across the board.
Dozens and dozens and dozens of people. Like, I'm fairly certain that if you go and talk to all the people that I've worked with, or dozens and dozens and dozens of them, I hope you'll find lots of people that said, yeah, I've worked with Matt, I thought he was great. You're gonna find some that are like, that jerk better not ever show his face around here again, right? You're gonna find somebody. And you know, who knows, maybe the author found somebody and just left them out. But his claim was, I talked to a lot of people, and they all painted a fairly consistent picture of, for me, of a person who's not the person that you see giving campaign speeches, who they really like. And for better or worse, that was a powerful argument. It softened me on her. I'd love for somebody to do that for Donald Trump.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Like, I've read other articles before about, like, why Clinton is disliked, and why, you know, people have such vitriolic hatred towards her. And sometimes the explanation is that she just isn't, she's a very, like, one-dimensional person. Like, her politics and her career is all there is to her. You know, aside from occasional anecdotes. Oh, no, you're opening the third bottle of tequila. Aside from occasional anecdotes about her being a grandmother, you know, and a mother and having a grandchild and all this, you don't know anything about, like, what does she like to do in her free time? What books does she read? Does she play any sports? You know, Obama plays basketball and golf and, like, there's nothing to her personal life because she's essentially dedicated her life to politics. So there's nothing to grasp onto there. You know, when people talk about this concept of, I want to vote for somebody I want to have a beer with, you know, or somebody I can relate to, no one can relate to her except politicians.
Maybe, you know, she meditates in her chamber and her face mask comes off.
In the back room.
Yeah. You know, well, like Darth Vader does. I don't know, right? You just don't know. It's entirely possible.
So then the odd counterpoint to me with Donald Trump is, again, it's usually this, the Republicans are usually the ones who are conservatives who make this argument. I want, you know, I want to vote for somebody I could have a beer with. Who wants to have a beer with Donald Trump? I mean, he's a total a-hole. Do you want to have a beer with Donald Trump? Even if you support him, I don't think you want to have a beer with him.
I'm pretty sure Ted Cruz doesn't want to.
No, I mean, he's gonna, like...
Is that guy not the most brilliant guy in the room this year? Like, he didn't endorse Trump, even at the convention. And, you know, because he predicted, at least to himself, that the Trump campaign was going to implode. And now he looks like the brightest guy in the room. Talk about political calculation for your own self-interest.
I mean, you go for a beer with Donald Trump, he's probably going to blow at you about how successful one of his businesses is. He's going to make fun of your shoes. He's going to, I mean, he's just like a jerk. He would be a jerk.
If you had a beer with Trump, his glass would be bigger and more ornate than yours.
I'm sure.
Also, his beer would be better.
So that's always weird to me that people who are like personality driven are supporting this man who has this terrible personality. This whole Russia thing is very weird, too. Have you been following that at all? You know, all along, he's been like, I like Putin. Putin's a good guy. The Russians should hack the DNC's email. One of his advisors is big into Russia. I mean, don't people remember the Cold War and Reagan and Mr. Gorbachev tear down that wall? And, like, I mean, Republicans hate the Russians. Like, what is this?
I don't know.
It's just so bizarre. I mean, it's almost comical.
I can't talk about it without yelling, so we should move fast.
Time to move on. Anyway, okay, this was a really interesting article. I enjoyed it very much, and it does kind of it solidifies some things that were rolling around in my head that I didn't understand about Hillary Clinton, and now I feel like I have a better understanding of how she's gotten to where she is today. Yep. And why she behaves in the way she behaves, and whether it's good or bad or ugly.
There it is.
There it is. Exactly. What's up next?
You want to mention this Hey Siri thing?
Oh, yeah. I didn't totally understand it. You explain it to me.
So, you know, Siri is effectively undocumented. And so this website, hey-siri.io, is a list of all of the commands that you can give to Siri by way of example.
So is this just like a trial and error evidence, or where is this derived from? That's what I couldn't understand.
I believe the authors have done this by trial and error.
Okay.
But nonetheless, it's a handy reference.
Yeah. Yeah. A vast majority of this stuff I did not know Siri could do.
Yeah, me either. Now, I don't use Siri a lot. But, you know, doesn't mean I don't want to. The beauty of it is, have you scrolled over, like, up at the top in the conversion? Just scroll over the three things that it has, the three examples that it has there. Are they changing for you?
Yeah.
That's very clever.
It is.
But, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do, right?
I didn't know a lot of them that I didn't know were are not questions, but are more like commands, like training Siri.
Yep.
Like, for instance, this, it has an example, like you can say, Thomas is my brother.
Right.
So then Siri will remember that, I'm assuming, and you can say, call my brother.
Yep. If only you had three brothers named Daryl.
Yeah. No, Siri, my other brother, Daryl.
Daryl is my brother. Daryl is my other brother. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is cool. I'm going to have to spend some time going through this.
Though Siri can't do the one thing that I really want her to be able to do, which is say, start playing this podcast and use the AirPlay target of my living room.
Oh.
Like, I want to be able to direct my audio to AirPlay targets.
And you do that on the phone, but Siri can't do that. That's too bad.
Yeah. There's always hope for iOS 10.
Yeah. I'm assuming that Siri is going to rapidly be enhanced just because of the introduction to it on macOS.
I think it will continue. If anything, its enhancement speed is going to increase, if only because there are actually now credible alternatives with Hey Google and
Alexa
living in your Echo. That's right, you have one now.
Yeah, my Echo just lit up because I said Alexa.
So,
That's the I didn't understand what you said noise. I'm shutting off. I'm tuning you out.
So, let's take it aside here. You have this thing now.
I do.
And?
I like it. I'm not using it a ton. I mean, I like using it for toy purposes, like asking, is it going to rain today? I use it a lot for playing music.
Because you're too lazy to hit play?
Yeah, well, if my hands are wet, I'm cooking, I'm doing something.
Okay.
It's pretty handy for playing music. It's unfortunate. It's not very good at playing podcasts. It'll only play podcasts that are on, I think it's like TuneIn Radio, or it only supports certain...
Yeah.
I would really like to have it play podcasts, and what I end up doing, it has a good speaker, and it's better than my phone speaker, so I end up... It's pretty simple to get it to connect to Bluetooth. So basically what I can do is I can get it to connect to Bluetooth and then just play on the phone.
What I don't understand is... And I'm sure there's a reason. Jeff Bezos does not do random. But I feel like Amazon's digital empire could run the world if only it could integrate with Apple stuff. Right? Like, if Alexa was the Apple TV...
Don't say that.
Apple TV is a digital media player and a micro console developed and sold by Apple Incorporated.
Wow. I would smash that thing to a thousand pieces.
That was some good information.
It was not helpful. If only that stupid thing, you know, was what you want the Apple TV to be.
Yeah, they don't want to pay the VIG. They don't want to pay the Apple tax.
Then
they don't want to pay 30% of everything where their margin... I mean, their margin on digital goods...
30% would be a myth. You know they could do it for 10.
I think that's... I mean, Amazon notoriously doesn't make any profit. I think their margin on digital goods is probably like 1% or something ridiculous. 3% maybe.
Yeah, they don't make profit because they're always chasing larger volumes.
Right.
Why do they not want Apple people who notoriously spend way more money than not Apple people?
I mean, so do you think they should just charge? I mean, they can't lose money on every digital purchase just because you purchased it on an Apple device. I mean, having you, rich Apple person, come to my platform and buy tons of digital content is no good if I lose money on every piece of digital content you buy through your Apple product. So
you're telling me that they can't, I mean, they can't figure out how to raise the price 2 cents? I mean, I don't know. The stuff that you buy from Amazon,
again,
price fluctuates.
They would have to reprice everything to pad in the what they're paying Apple. Because Apple doesn't allow you to charge a different price through an Apple product than you charge through the web, for instance. So
undoubtedly, there is a reason. Like I said, right? I do not personally know Jeff Bezos. I believe he's a very smart man who makes very calculated decisions. Right? I'm not here questioning his wisdom.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. Right? And your argument that it's razor-thin margins, maybe that's true. Right? Maybe. And maybe it is as simple as that. I just don't like it because it means that if I want to participate in the Amazon empire, then I got to deal with, you know, this weird split brain crap, right? I'm not going to have four, you know, personal assistants or things plugged into my TV. I'm not doing that crap. Right? You know, so I need it all to work on one. And Amazon's seems like they've decided to take their ball and go home. So, okay.
I do like that. So I've bought a lot of music on Amazon over the years. So with AutoRip, and at one time I uploaded a ton of my music to Amazon Music.
Yeah.
So it's all just there, and I don't maintain my music collection in iTunes or in Apple Music anymore.
Yeah, but you stream music to your phone, right? Like, if you're going to go for a run and you want to listen to tunes while you run?
I generally just download stuff in Apple Music.
Okay.
And whatever I can get in Apple Music. Like, I don't download stuff from my NAS or from Amazon Music onto the phone.
Because I really like having music on the phone.
Right.
I like not being dependent on any network connectivity whatsoever.
Yep.
Right. A few weeks ago, I took that 4,000-mile motorcycle trip through all kinds of places that had no network, nothing. Right. But the 14 gigs of music on my iPhone were pumping through the stereo system night and day. All the damn time. And if I was dependent on streaming from Apple Music or, you know, trying to download 20 or 30 tracks at the hotel the night before or something like that, right, I'd lose my mind. Don't want.
Yeah, and I mean, Apple Music makes it really easy to download music.
But it requires an action, right?
It does.
I don't know. Maybe in iOS 10, you'd be able to say, you know, Siri, download the entire Dire Straits catalog.
Yeah.
And it would just do it.
I was going to look. So I have like 9.8 gigs of music downloaded in Apple Music.
Yeah. How big is your phone?
64 gig.
You're going to get the rumored 256 gig iPhone 7?
So you know what? This whole iPhone 7 thing kind of irritates me. So I'm planning on upgrading to the 7 because I have the 6. It'll be 2 years. When I bought the 6, I intentionally was buying on the, is it the Talk cycle? Whatever the big cycle is. Not the S cycle.
Yep.
But like the non-S cycle. So I got the big revision. And then I was like, in 2 years, you know, then I will upgrade to whatever the next big revision is. And now they've skipped to 3-year cycles, so...
Rumored. Why do you care?
Just because I feel like I made a... I don't plan on switching to yearly upgrade cycles. So...
You're not going
to
just pay the flat fee?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because this phone has been pretty good for 2 years, and you essentially save $1,000, you know. But I feel like now I'm getting screwed because a year into having the 7 now, if they're going to release the 8 or whatever the new talk is, whatever.
I've owned 2 S phones and 1 non-S phone.
And you're going to tell me the S phone is better because they fixed all the problems.
It has been my preference to have the S phones.
But you had to wait a year once everybody else got the new hot.
Maybe, but it means I didn't own the iPhone 4 or the 4S.
Right.
And I'm not sorry about that.
Well, anyway, I'll probably still get an S. Like, this phone is starting to have a lot of, like, I don't know.
So,
not so niceties about it.
A friend of mine has a 6. And he works his phone hard, right? Takes a lot of conference calls during his day. His job is very demanding. And some days I don't know how he does it. So he works his phone hard. I get it. But for the last couple of months, his phone was always dying on him all the time. He couldn't get a whole day out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mine's doing that.
And it just, the battery was just, and so he's complaining about it. And I'm like, well, go to the Apple store, right? I mean, if the battery is out of spec, they'll mm-hmm. replace it for you. And if not, you know, spend the money and have them replace it. And so he did, and they ran the Apple test on it, the battery test, the secret battery test program that only the Genius Bar has. And his battery tested out to 82%. And they're like, nope, your battery's fine. You know, and they wanted to talk about changing all of the settings to minimize mm-hmm. battery usage. And so he's like, yeah, I've done all that. And they went and they checked, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you have done all that. And your phone still doesn't last all day? No, not even at all, right? And I've seen him do it. Like, I've, you know, he's always charging his stupid mm-hmm. phone, right? And it's, you know, you look and it's like, oh, yeah, it's at 72%, right? And then 45 minutes later, you know, his phone's at 28%.
Hmm.
I'm like, well, it hasn't even been an hour, right? Where did all that juice go? He's like, I don't know. This battery is crappy. And so I was like, well, you know, because the battery has to be less than 80%. And then on the Apple battery test, and then Apple will change the battery, a.k.a. they'll take your phone.
Give you a new one. Refurb.
Give you a refurb.
Yep.
That's had a new battery installed.
Hmm.
And, you know, so we commiserated about his stupid phone for a couple of months. And I said, you know, because there's the...
Well, go back again and eventually it'll be below the 82%.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and there's that store. It's not the Apple store, but it's that Apple authorized.
Certified, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, go talk to those guys, right? They're just at the mall. See if they have the battery test and can run the battery test for you. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's a good idea. So he went there. And they pulled up his account, right? And they ran the battery test, and it tested at 85%. Like 2 months later.
It's gotten better.
And I'm like, I'm not buying that. He's like, yeah, I'm not buying that either, mm-hmm. right? So, I don't know. He did text me earlier this week. He was in Omaha, and I think he had a Genius Bar appointment. And they were behind, so he was waiting a long time for his appointment. And his phone, in the time that he was waiting, his phone lost like 60% of its battery. And I don't know what he said, but the battery still did not test below 80%. But they gave him a new phone anyway. But they didn't have it there. So he had to go to our nearest Apple store at Mall of America, right? Mm-hmm.
To get it.
But he's got a new phone
now. And his battery lasts all day?
I don't know if it lasts all day, but he's like, it lasts way longer. He's like, it behaves like it should. So.
My battery doesn't last like it used to, but the bigger problem, I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before, but the Lightning connector is wonky, so it's very hard to get it to charge.
Yeah.
So frequently it'll be charging, and I set it down very gingerly and walk away, and I'll come back, and it's not charging anymore because it's just adjusted ever so slightly. Like, I kind of have to twist it to one side almost to get it to charge.
That's broken. You should get it fixed.
And I have 3 Apple Lightning cables, and I've bought a 4th non-Apple Lightning cable, and it's the same.
Yeah, and like, we've tried my cables in the car. Yeah,
it's the same with all of them. Yeah, so it's just... I mean, I don't know if it's just that the port has worn down over time or what. I have a feeling, though, that they can possibly just replace the Lightning port in my
phone. Did you try digging lint out of it?
No. You think that could be it?
I thought my headphone jack on a previous phone wasn't working, but it was just full of lint.
Did you take it to the Apple store and get it dug out, or did you figure it out yourself?
No, I did some internet searching. They said lint, and so I tried.
Okay.
Well, I had to resort to bending a paperclip and jamming it down in the hole.
I could check it out. I kind of feel like I paid for, like, Apple Care Plus, and I've never used it, and so I should just go to the
Apple
store.
Now it's time.
Yeah. So they can dig the lint out of my phone. A friend of mine was just asking me yesterday, I think she's getting an SE, which she got, and I'm curious to see it. Should you get Apple Care? Do you do Apple Care on your phone?
I wanted to on this phone. You remember traditionally you had 90 days to buy Apple Care?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you don't. You have 60 days.
Oh, and so you just didn't do it, and then...
Well, I called them at like 67 days. Like, I didn't know how long it had been, right? I bought this at the AT&T store on launch day. And it was a purchase of opportunity because, like, it was late in the afternoon. I thought, well, yeah, I'll swing by just to see if they have any. I'm sure they don't. And if there's a line, I'm not going to wait. Store was empty. I walked in. You know,
so you can't buy Apple Care at the AT&T store. You have to buy it from Apple, or you just chose not to.
I don't know. I mean, all of the AT&T workers were totally zonked out. They didn't even ask me. It didn't even occur to me, right? If I could buy it or not. I'm sure they want to sell you whatever their AT&T insurance is, which is less interesting to me.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, you know, I thought of it a couple of days later. And I thought, I'll just. You know, I'll call Apple one of these days. And by the time I got around to it, more than 60 days had passed. So, I do not have Apple Care on the phone. I traditionally buy Apple Care on phones because I've never had an iPhone. I haven't broken at least once.
Oh.
And I'm not a guy that breaks stuff. But.
They're very breakable.
So far, I've had my 6S almost a year.
Yeah, that's the main reason I did it, because they have that policy. I can't remember how much it is, but it's even if you, I mean, it's your fault you broke it, it's like $100 to get a new one or something like that.
There's some deductible fee. This is the first phone I've put in a case, and I hate it.
Yeah.
But I think we've already discussed my hatred for the camera bump.
The bump, yeah. Actually, like, my case was kind of dirty, and I had taken the phone out of the case here about a week ago, and it was out, and, you know, my phone is still in pristine condition, and it was so nice and smooth, and I was like, you know what?
It's tiny.
I'm 18 months in to this phone. I'm just going to start carrying it without a case. And I did it for, like, a day, and then I just couldn't handle it. Case. It's very slippery. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to drop this. It's just not worth it.
I still contend my old 3GS with the curved plastic back that had a lot of good tactile feel to it. Like, when that thing was in my hand, it was not coming out.
Yeah.
That was the best design. I would really like a curved back design. Because then, guess what they could get rid of? Stupid camera bump.
So, yeah, I'll still probably get the 7. I mean, I'm actually excited about the port change. I don't need the headphone jack. I'm excited about advancements in wireless earbuds. So I would be happy to be on the bleeding edge of that and see what happens.
Are you going to get bigger than 64?
Probably just stick with 64. It hasn't been a problem for me. I did finally bite the bullet here maybe a month ago and upgrade my iCloud storage.
Oh, so you're paying like the
dollar? I'm paying the dollar a month for iCloud storage.
It's like 50 gigs for a buck, right?
Which is an insane price.
Yeah. I don't use iCloud for anything other than my email account. I mean, that's not true. I mean, I have some things in iCloud Drive and whatever else, but I just haven't
found that to be valuable to my workflow. I think I started storing a lot more stuff in Notes across iCloud.
Yeah.
I can't remember. In Photos.
I use Simple Note. I haven't... I should try Notes. Because I'm on all of my Macs are El Capitan, and you know I'm running iOS 9 now. I should try Notes and see how I like it.
There was a vast improvement in it in what was it iOS 9, whatever the new version was. It's pretty sweet.
I haven't really tried it, but I should. I would love to be able to use iCloud Drive like you used to be able to use .NAC file storage, whatever it was called.
Was it just Dropbox-ish? Like, was it just an arbitrary file store? Yeah. It seems odd to me that you can't do that with iCloud.
Yeah, because I would much rather... I'd totally pay Apple $1 a month for 50 gigs than, you know, pay Dropbox the bazillion dollars they want for...
Yeah, I can't believe that they don't have a feature that is just like iCloud folder synchronization or something like that, where you can just define a working set that you want synced.
Yeah, just a folder on my computers. That'd be awesome, but nope.
That's weird.
Not gonna do it.
I'm surprised somebody hasn't, maybe somebody has written like a Mac app that is just that. It's like folder sync for Mac and iPhone, you know.
Maybe.
And you install this app in both places and it just syncs a folder between.
I think the traditional cloud file sync APIs were kind of crappy for a long time.
So you were better off using Dropbox or OneDrive or Box or something else.
Did we talk about this last week, right? When I put the new hard drive
on
my computer and I clone my disk back, like Dropbox figured itself out. Like it took a few minutes and it was like, okay, I got it. Yeah. You're good. Right?
Box, not so much.
Box, you know, crapped its pants, right? I mean, it was a mess. Like I had to go clean it up. It made duplicates of all, I mean, it was a mess. Mm. I don't know. It was not good. Box, why do you suck?
You think we got time one more topic here? You want to pick something else?
Well,
I don't know. What are we at? Should we wind it down?
Yeah, so let's talk about the fundamental flaw in Batman versus Superman.
Okay. This could be any number of things, too, right?
It could be. So this is a video where, you know, one of these YouTubers gives us his 2 cents on... what's wrong with Batman versus Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, there's a lot wrong in Batman versus Superman, right?
Yep.
Evan Pushak. Pushchak? I don't know how to say his last name. That's the guy. But his argument, which I think is pretty compelling, is... the director, Zack Snyder, has assembled a series of moments together and called it a movie, which hasn't really created a story, right? Like, the story of Batman vs. Superman is kind of disjointed, and it doesn't... really make a lot of sense, and you don't really know what's going on.
And they tried to do all these things, which was part of my original problem after seeing it, is they just tried to accomplish too much.
Yeah.
And
the whole thing falls flat. So I thought the analysis was pretty decent.
It was. And what I took away from it is that he focused more on filmmaking than storytelling. Like, he focused more on making the movie look really good than having it make sense and be a compelling story. And maybe that's because he didn't completely appreciate the source material. And so he's like, then I'm just going to make a really beautiful, emotionally compelling movie filled with all these moments that are going to, you know, affect you in some way. Because I've been given garbage to work with.
But it wasn't emotionally compelling.
It wasn't, right. I don't think it achieved what he wanted to. But what this analysis seems to say is, you know, these lingering shots, these close-ups, these, you know, a lot of examples in the movie are, it's trying to make some sort of emotional connection with these moments.
Yeah.
That aren't stitched together with anything.
No. I could go on for what I don't like about it. But suffice it to say, the best thing to come out of the Batman vs. Superman movie is Wonder Woman. And I have high hopes for the forthcoming Wonder Woman movie. Are you interested in seeing this?
Yeah, I do think it looks good.
Did you watch the trailer? There was a trailer.
Yes.
So, I'm excited for that. Speaking of DC's nightmare.
Suicide Squad, did you see it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. No spoilers. I just went and saw Star Trek last night. I'm behind.
So
I'm way behind.
You have the beats and the shouting?
The beats and the shouting.
That's what she
said. Oh, the music and the beats and the shouting. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
What was shocking to me about that movie is how little of it takes place on the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, because like all good Star Trek movies, they blow it up in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. I guess just the last couple of movies were a lot, you know, a lot more time was spent, I don't know, on the... I felt like this third movie was very different from the first two.
Well, it was a different director.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's part of it.
And it kind of showed. Like, at the end, you know, the Franklin or whatever that ship was is, like, surfing. Like, I don't know. It felt like surf scenes. And there's one scene where it's, like, the... I got the impression that the bad ships, you know, that were behaving... like a hive mind thing. Mm-hmm. Like they were forming this giant tidal wave, right? Like the mythical Japanese tidal wave that protects the island, right? You know, and so that imagery is kind of fun. I don't think history is going to be kind to that movie. Right? Like
No, I don't think so either. Because
it's a little bit ridiculous. It did not have, you know, Spock in a fist fight. Which I think I've discussed with you. If that's the climax of your movie, you've done it wrong.
I felt like the ending scene was not dissimilar to the second movie with Spock and Khan fighting on the ship, you know, and now we have Kirk and whatever the dude's name was. Krall, which was kind of similar to Khan, actually, I thought. When they were saying Krall, I was like... who's the next K villain going to be? I don't know. I liked it. I like Star Trek, but I think it's a continued downhill slide from the first movie, which was stellar.
I
didn't really care for the second one.
It was stellar. Part of what it was stellar about is that first 5 minutes. Right? That opening sequence of the movie.
Really kicks it off.
Was fantastic. The rest of the movie, not as good. One of the things that this reboot of Star Trek has gotten right is I really think that cast, you know, Zachary Quinto, Chris Pine, and what's his face as the Doctor, and what's her face as Uhura, right? They're all good together. Like, I like all of those characters.
Yep.
And so I'm, you know, I'm willing to go see 6 or 8 movies with them in it.
No, me too. I mean, I think this franchise will definitely continue, and it deserves to continue. I just don't think this was a great script.
Nah, could have been better.
So I IMDb'd Zack Snyder here. Like, I don't... He has yet to direct, like, a highly successful movie, right?
Well, I suppose that depends on
how... We have Dawn of the Dead, 300, Watchmen...
300? That was a big successful movie.
I guess. Sucker Punch, Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, and now I guess he's directing both the Justice League and Justice League Part 2. So I don't feel it's like he hit one out of the park in the past. I guess 300 was a good movie, but I don't know.
Let's see. Hey, he's from Wisconsin.
I guess what I was trying to do is, so this idea that he focuses more on the moments in the filmmaking to think about that in his past movies, but I just don't really have a strong memory of any of his past movies that I've seen. So
300 is a bunch of moments strung together.
Same thing.
But it works better for 300.
Uh, It's because there isn't probably as strong of a storyline or a story that needs to be told in 300. There's like, it's not a complex plot.
It's not as much character. Mm. Right? Like, what always makes Batman such a compelling story, like the Christian Nolan Batman trilogy, is Batman as a character is complicated. Mm-hmm. And so it allows for a lot of interesting storytelling about, you know, a smart, wealthy guy that
right.
does this vigilante thing, right? Like, how do you...
It's hard to convey that with just a lot of close-frame, well-lit shots.
Yeah, like, how do you paint a picture and tell a compelling story about somebody who's got embodied in them, you know, two extreme opposite ends, right? Like, somebody who really wants to do good and could have a lot of influence on the system, but chooses to go outside of it. Mm-hmm. Right? The Bruce Wayne character could, you know, as a gazillionaire, could, you know, buy politicians and, you know, bend the system to his will, but instead he chooses to put on a hockey mask and go punch people at night. And so that makes it an interesting character.
So I digress there. Suicide Squad, no spoilers, yay nay?
I liked it better than Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something.
That's a low bar.
Yeah, I'll probably see it eventually.
I have not seen the current Bourne movie yet, though. Mm. Have you?
I did see that this week, yeah.
Good? Bad?
It's good. I like Matt Damon, so.
Because it kind of got panned.
It's pretty much a sure thing. It's interesting. I'll wait till you after you see it to talk about it. Once again, I don't think it's a great script.
Yeah. It's got... Well, I guess it's got a 7 out of 10 on IMDb. What's its Rotten Tomatoes score?
That's where I was headed.
Yeah. But, you know, I'll see it because... I watch the other three Bourne movies probably once a year.
Me too, I own them and I rewatch them.
So, yeah.
57% fresh for Jason Bourne, so not particularly well ranked.
Nope.
Star Trek Beyond, 84%.
That seems a little high.
That does, yeah, that does to me too.
But hey, what do I know? So they made a... Have you seen the previews for the Mechanic? The next Mechanic movie with Jason Statham?
Just when we were in the bar the other night. But no, I haven't watched it. Is it going to be good?
No, it's going to be terrible. But I'm going to go see it. Yeah. I have a... I kind of have a man crush on Jason Statham. I don't know. I really like his movies. He kind of always plays the same character in them, but
he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, what do I know?
All right, should we wind it down?
Yeah. I mean,
the Sentinela Añejo is my favorite of the three.
Yeah, not the Corazon Añejo that was in the old Rip Van Winkle.
That was good, but not as good of a sipper. And then what was the third one we tried? The Cazadores Extra Añejo. That was good too.
This
tequila is good. There, that's my opinion.
And on that note, until next week.
All right, see you, man.